And welcome to the latest edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. So glad you could join us with you for the next 60 minutes as we break down all that is happening with respect to the team. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. If you can't get to the phones, you can also chime in via Twitter using hashtag Giants Chat. Alongside Anita Marks, I'm Lance Meadow. A lot to delve into over the next hour as the Giants wrapped up mini camp over the weekend. The coordinators spoke for the first time on Saturday. So we'll get into the comments from Ben McAdoo, as well as Steve Spagnuolo and Tom Quinn. Tom Coughlin also addressed the media. There's a number of interesting comments that they all had, so we'll certainly get into that. We'll get to your phone calls as well. And if you want to weigh in on anything with respect to the team, the rookies, the current roster, the depth chart, and so forth, we can certainly tackle just about everything. Anita, how's everything?
We can tackle. I like
it. We can tackle everything. That's what we're here for.
Things are great. I mean, was not here last week, unfortunately. I missed the rookie mini camp, but, I was all over the websites and trying to pay attention to all the reports that were coming out and some pretty exciting stuff. I'd like to kind of get into, you know, how this offensive line is going to look, possibly, Landon Collins. The one thing that, that I got from reading all the reports is that his leadership that a number of people saw while he was here for minicamp. Interesting to see how that kind of spills over once the veterans get on board. And I know that the DB, that secondary unit, is something that we've been really concerned about. Exciting. It sounded like the coaches and the staff here were very, very happy with the minicamp. And so two thumbs up, right?
And they brought a number of players in that took part in the minicamp. They signed them to contracts, so clearly they got the most out of that. You referenced Landon Collins, and let's start there. Steve Spagnuolo, when he spoke to the media, he was asked numerous questions about Landon Collins, and he did allude to the fact that what stood out to him in rookie minicamp was the fact that within a day or two, they threw him out on the field, and he was already lining up other players, directing them where to go. The leadership traits that he showed in Alabama already are being translated to the NFL minicamp field. So I think that says a lot about what he brings to the table with very limited experience. And Spags already noted that. And for a defensive coordinator, not a positional coach, for the defensive coordinator to note that, I think that could be a very positive sign of what's yet to come.
Another thing that I read in regard to Spags is that he said, you know, all the safeties or all the DBs that more than likely have the ability to play safety, he'd like for them to learn both the free and the strong safety position, and then make a decision as, of course, their way into training camp in regard to who's going to play where. I kind of like that as well.
Yeah, Spags referenced that everybody's playing right and left at this point. There is no free and strong safety, which is one of the things that we had discussed on this program leading in, because not everybody is assigned the specific safety role. So this way, they're just going to get a feel for where everybody may fit in down the road. Speaking of the defensive backfield, Tom Coughlin was asked about Bennett Jackson moving to safety, why he was moved there. He said they love his cover skills, and they just felt that he has the size to translate there. What had happened is when he returned to the facility, they ran it by him right before they started to get into voluntary workouts, and he was totally open to that. So that's how that at least transpired. He was also asked about Shockey Brown, because if you recall at the owners' meetings, Tom Coughlin threw out a few names about players that could make the transition from corner to safety. He seemed to indicate that for the time being, they view Shockey Brown as a corner. That could change down the road, but I think the biggest development out of rookie minicamp is taking Bennett Jackson and throwing him right into the mix of the safeties, Anita, and this could be a great way for him to solidify a role on this team.
Yeah, absolutely, and you know, the disappointing part is, like, we really didn't get a good taste of him last year because, unfortunately, he was injured. So we didn't see a lot. The media, we as fans of Giants, don't really have a lot to assess what we think he can do on the football field. So I think it's going to be intriguing. I think it's going to be interesting. Obviously, the coaches know a lot more than we do. And if they believe that he can make that transition and be a starting safety on this squad, really, I think that's going to be a really interesting storyline come training camp.
And he seems to be open and excited about taking on this new challenge. It's amazing how a few weeks ago we had focused so much on the fact that the Giants only have two safeties on the roster, and now they have options. And that's the key. It doesn't mean that anybody has solidified a role, but the fact that you have bodies, you have people that could foster competition is something that will be very interesting to watch moving forward. You have a mix of rookies now, Landon Collins and Michael Thompson, who were brought in via the draft. You have Nat Burhey and Cooper Taylor, who already were on the team. And now you have, on top of that, Bennett Jackson, who was hurt last year, as Anita referenced. Now he's out there in the mix. And let's not forget about Josh Gordy, too, who also has some experience with Spags based on his time with the Rams.
Yeah. And, I mean, this is my first chance to be on Big Blue Kickoff Live since the draft transpired. Assuming that you were kind of watching it unfold, I was actually in Chicago night one on Thursday. Pretty disappointed that the Giants draft pick, Flowers, wasn't there. Was hoping to get like a post-pick interview with him at the theater, but unfortunately it didn't happen. But nonetheless, day two, thought it was interesting. Obviously, the start of round two, Giants trade up and landed Collins, that a lot of people felt was a first-round draft pick. I know we've been on the show before, and I was really singing the praises of Eric Rowe. And going into round two, Gil Brandt was saying how apparently one of the Giants scouts was really big on Rowe. So, it was a lot of anticipation for me to see what was going to happen. Landon Collins didn't go in the first round. He was there. He was available. Were the Giants making some moves to go and get another first-round draft pick, luckily in the second round? Or did they hear that there were other teams that were just as interested in Eric Rowe that they wanted to jump up ahead of them and grab him? Obviously, we know what happened. Eric Rowe ends up with the Philadelphia Eagles in the same division, the NFC East. So I think it's going to be interesting to see these two DBs and their careers develop. But definitely, again, you really got to tip your hat to the Giants draft class and who they drafted. Again, this is the first chance you and I have had to talk about their selections. I mean, Mel Kiper gave them a B+ as a grade. Your thoughts on how the Giants did?
Well, grading draft picks at this point is so premature. No. I know everybody does it.
I think you can't, obviously you can't grade the draft picks, yeah. But grading in regard to, how a team was able to maneuver to get certain players that were ranked in certain categories with a lot of the analysts out there.
Well, I think when you look at the Giants draft from a need and from a value perspective, they have a nice mix. You know, they needed an offensive lineman for the case of depth. They got a top 10 pick worthy of an offensive lineman. They needed safety. They brought in who many people ranked as a first-round pick at safety, and they sacrificed two late-round picks. It's worth taking that risk to bring in a first-round caliber player. On the back end of the draft, you brought in another safety who also is versatile because he could play corner based on his days with Texas. You brought in the third round, a defensive end who also a number of people had ranked potentially as a first-round pick, if not for the hip injuries and some other things that he had to deal with. So value, I think that was a big storyline of this Giants draft, where they took those players, the fact that they fill needs on this current roster. It worked out extremely well. Now the goal is to get them acclimated to the system, throw them out there, and get an immediate return, just as the Giants did with that 2014 draft class. So I think that there's that positive feel, that positive vibe like they had last year. Now the heavy lifting comes where you want them to all of a sudden showcase their skill sets on the field, and that's what they started with respect to rookie minicamp. I mean, the fact that they're raving already about Landon Collins, it's a very small resume, limited work, you know, that's a positive. You want a guy like that who you moved up to show leadership qualities as well as be very ready to step in terms of his football X's and O's. And I think he answered the call in this very small period of time at rookie minicamp.
I know I touched on it briefly when we opened up the show, but also talk about the offensive line and how it's going to pan out. I think we're all kind of expecting, we know who the five starters are going to be, but where are they going to go? And I guess the big question mark is what happens at that tackle position. Does Pugh stay there or not? I think we're all anticipating Pugh to move into guard and Flowers to move out to tackle, but nothing has obviously been decided yet. But again, you know, my take is top 10 player drafted, hands down starter in the NFL. So just a matter of where he's going to play, and everybody's expecting him to play right tackle.
Well, on that topic, Ben McAdoo also addressed the media. He was asked, with Eric Flowers here now, is Justin Pugh a guard? His answer was, that remains to be seen. Justin Pugh right now is the starting right tackle for the Giants. Then he was asked a follow-up question, where do you see Flowers fitting in? We are going to play our best five, and if he is one of them, he will find the spot. And then he was asked, what do you see out of Flowers that you like so far this week? He looks like he likes football. This is a great place to start. He's a conscientious young man. I look forward to watching him grow. So those were the main three questions that he was asked about with respect to Eric Flowers. And yes, right now they view Justin Pugh as the starting right tackle. Because keep in mind, it is May 12th. And we haven't had OTAs, and we haven't had training camp. So at this point, the Giants are not going to jump out and lay out their entire depth chart and tell you that they're moving this guy around and moving that guy around, considering the veterans and the rookies have yet to mesh and be on the field at the same time. So it's extremely premature to make and rush to those judgments until you at least get some work in. But the goal, like any year, is you want your top first-round pick to be a starter. But I always reference this fact. When Justin Pugh was drafted, David Deal got hurt. That opened the door for Justin Pugh. If David Deal doesn't get hurt, there's no guarantee Justin Pugh is starting. And the same thing with respect to Weston Richburg. Now, Weston Richburg, I understand, was a second-round pick. It's a little different, but he was a high second-round pick. If Jeff Schwartz doesn't get hurt, there's no guarantee that Weston Richburg is in the lineup week one. So you at least need to look at the Giants' track record in that regard. That doesn't mean Flowers is going to follow the same script, but I just reference that because the Giants do have a track record in that department.
I understand that, but my belief is your first-round draft pick should be a starter, period. Hands down. Done. For example, and I know this is comparing apples and oranges, but look at the situation that's going on with the Tampa Bay Bucs. They go out, they do draft Jameis Winston. He comes in. He's going to be, quote-unquote, competing with Mike Glennon for the starting quarterback position. But come on. Number one overall? Do you not think Jameis Winston's going to start?
You would assume he's going to start, but like I said, a lot of things play out.
I'm just a really big believer. First-round draft pick, especially top 10, he starts. The big question mark is where, and I think we're all anticipating it to be right tackle and Pugh to move into guard, but, you know, obviously that decision has not been communicated by the staff.
And to be honest with you, nor should it have been communicated at this point because, Anita, like I said, if they come out and then things change drastically, that's going to create more of a debate. I think right now, you got to wait and see till all of these guys line up at training camp and OTAs. Eric Flowers has yet to be next to any of the established veteran offensive linemen on this roster.
So right now, if you were to assume, you know what happens when you assume, but when you were, are you assuming he does not play? Are you assuming that, where do you assume he plays then?
Well, I have come out and I have said that I think at the end of the day, he'll probably be the right tackle.
Okay.
And they'll probably move Pugh. But as I've referenced with respect to other players in the past who have been drafted relatively high, a lot remains to be seen. The Giants, I don't think, based on their track record, the organization that says, we take you at this spot, you have to be a starter day one.
I'm not saying they do. I'm saying that.
My philosophy is
if you are a first-round draft pick, you should be NFL. That's my opinion. That's my philosophy, especially if you're top 10. And I expect it. I expect nothing less.
And I would not be surprised if that's what plays out in week one.
Okay.
But I would also not be surprised if the opposite end of the spectrum plays out too, because we've seen a lot of teams follow different procedures when it comes to this. Let's open up the phone lines here at 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. To get us started, we have Len in Maryland. Len, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
How we doing,
Len? Haven't spoken to you in a while.
I know. I haven't called in since the draft, and I'm really excited by what the Giants did, particularly with the first three picks. I think those first two guys are starters on day one. We'll see them in the lineup on September 13th against Dallas, and I think they'll be in the starting lineup. And the number three pick,
I'm
still working on being able to pronounce his name.
Just double O, double O. Let's keep
double
it,
O.
Let's keep it simple.
I think he'll contribute early on as well. Now, no fourth, and I want to come back to that. 5, 6, 6, and 7, well, you know, anything can happen. But, Lance, a lot of picks between number three and number five, a lot of guys went off the board. 65 players off the board between our third pick and our fifth pick. If you were 11-5 and coming off a Super Bowl win, that's okay. When you're 6-10 coming off 7-9.
Not to cut you off, and I'll let you continue. If you get a starting safety out of it, it's not worth the risk. If you get a starting safety for the next 5 or 6 years, maybe even a decade, it's not worth the risk.
Yep, it's worth. Listen, I'm not knocking the trade. Good move. I'm pleased we moved up, especially to get Landon Collins. I think that was a good move. All I'm saying is, the big move, Lance, would be to get back into the fourth round, maybe even back into the third round. Now, let me, before you comment on that, let me just say, and I think you've heard me say this before. I don't know if Anita's heard me say this before. I'm a big 2015 guy. I'm not a 2016 guy. I'm a 2015 guy. We got Eli in the last year. I know. Everybody says he's going to be a Giant long term. We got Eli in his last year. We got JPP. Lord only knows what's going on in JPP's head. But we got him for 1 year at this point, 1 year at the most. So I'm a 2015 guy, not a 2016 guy. I think we needed another pick. An awful lot of good players. I was starting to get a little jealous seeing these guys going off the board, you know, some big name players. But hey, listen, all in all, the offseason, you know, free agent, even the undrafted free agents, you know, the guys we signed, and I think Anita will know the kid from Maryland, Faran, the linebacker. Maybe not this first year, maybe a practice squad player. He needs to put on a little weight, but he's a tackling machine. He just makes tackles. And I think, you know, he's going to be a good player for us.
But
all in all, a really, really good job.
He was a solid player. Yeah.
Yeah, he really, really solid player in a big-time conference.
And
I mean, the Big Ten, that's big-time football.
Correct. And Len, you pretty much just answered your own question. You know, you're concerned about losing a draft pick, but at the same time, you're commending the team for then finding some undrafted players who could perhaps make some type of an impact or at least solidify a spot on the 53.
Yes, I thought they did a good job there. All I'm saying is that I got a little jealous watching all those players, you know, many of whom are going to be on rosters and they're going to contribute heartily, particularly when I look at the cornerback situation, Lance and Anita. I think we need some help there, and that fourth round would have been a place to do it. Not that I don't like the trade. Again, what I wanted to see Jerry do was maneuver a little bit and get back into the fourth round. And Anita, I'm with you. You know, I don't know. You know, Lance keeps talking about premature, and that's okay. I understand Lance's opinion, and I respect that. But, he's the ninth pick in the draft. How long do we wait, Lance? After OTAs? Or do we wait till September 12th when we're getting on the plane going to Dallas? I mean, come on, get these five guys together.
Len, they can't get on the field until OTA. CBA rules prevent that. I'm going by the book. I mean, you make it sound like I'm telling them that they should manipulate the system. They can't get on the field until the CBA allows it.
Okay, when does the big announcement come? When does the big announcement come, Lance? Does it come on the first day of training camp, or does it come when we're getting on the plane to go to Dallas? When does the big announcement come?
I'm sure it'll come at some point during the course of the preseason when they come to the decision that everybody has solidified a spot.
Okay.
Len, I'm not trying to be sarcastic. I mean, you can't sleep at night until they make a decision. I mean, you're that on the edge.
No.
You know, I mean,
I'm just saying, week one is not
September 13th in Dallas.
I understand what Lynn's saying because it's my thought. It's my thought process. And that is top 10 draft pick in the NFL, let alone top 32 draft pick in the NFL. You're a day one starter, regardless if OTAs have started, regardless if training camp has started. You're a first round draft pick. In my opinion, you need to be a first day starter in the NFL. That's my opinion. It's Lynn's opinion.
And I'm not disagreeing with your opinions. I'm just saying, do the Giants, have they not come out on the record and said that all players have to earn starting spots? Has that not been their mantra year in and year out?
And that's fine.
Let me just say this. I commended Jerry, and I'll do it again. I'm glad he's our GM. He does a fine job. I'm glad we got him. But look, if this guy, the number ninth pick in the draft, if he doesn't start opening night against Dallas, Jerry should leave the room immediately. I mean, come on. We know who the five best guys are. I mean, are we worried about John Jerry's feelings on this deal? I mean, come on. If Flowers isn't better than John Jerry, we got a problem, guys. Let me comment. Are you still with me?
I'm still on? I'm listening.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Real quick,
right,
we want to get to a few other calls. What else?
Okay, let me just say something real quick. I listened to yesterday's show last night. And there was a, you know, discussion about the defensive line and, you know, Ayers being the starter. I hope he's healthy, first of all. But I think we got to get better than Robert Ayers at defensive end. I like the versatility. I like the fact that he fits into a rotation. I just don't see him as the starting defensive end. I'm keeping my fingers crossed. I really want DeMontre Moore. First of all, be healthy, DeMontre. I want DeMontre Moore to be the guy.
I'm glad Ayers
is on the team. I just like him as in a rotational role, not the starter.
Lynn, let me jump in here, and thank you for the call. I appreciate it. I'm actually be in your neck of the woods Thursday. I'm heading down there for the Preakness. Really excited. American Pharoah, Triple Crown winner this year. But I think DeMontre Moore and Reuben Randle are the two players, offensively and defensively, that I feel need to take the next step this year. Need to. Those are the two guys. If you were to say I need a defensively, who's the one player you need to see make that leap? To me, it's DeMontre Moore. On the opposite side, it's Reuben Randle. And we've seen moments, right? We've seen, like, these really flashes of brilliance, these moments. What I'm talking about is consistency. I want to see consistency from Reuben Randle this year. I want to see a more committed work ethic from Reuben Randle this year. So those are the two players that going into 2015, I want to see elevate their game to a whole nother level. And so I'm with Lynn. I'm looking at DeMontre Moore being that opposite in defensive end from JPP. I want to believe that this is the year for him.
Well, also related to what Len was throwing out, first of all, Robert Ayers was by far one of the most productive defensive linemen on the team last year before he got hurt. He had 7 sacks when he went down, and whether he was a starter or a rotational player, he was extremely effective. Also keep in mind that Spags, as a defensive coordinator, has a track record of rotating players. So at the end of the day, I really don't think it matters who starts, who's in there for down number one, considering he usually utilizes just about all the weapons that are at his disposal at linebacker and at defensive lineman. So it really is minutia, as far as I'm concerned, who goes out there opposite JPP. It's more of a matter of how you're utilizing the personnel. Spags was asked about DeMontre Moore. Speaking of him, DeMontre Moore right now is finishing off his degree in college, so he wasn't with the team at this point, and Spags commended him for that. So they haven't had an opportunity to really sit down as much as he would like, but when he comes back, they expect to throw him in the mix and try to get the most out of him. So that will certainly be one player, I would agree with you, to monitor throughout the course of OTAs as well as training camp. Let's go to Brand in New Jersey. Brand, welcome aboard. What do you have for us?
Hey, what's going on, man?
How we doing, Brand? What you got?
Good. Yeah, I was just listening, and I called in yesterday. I was talking about the offensive line. This is, and I agree with Nita, the top pick does play. You put Flowers out at right tackle. You put Schwartz in at right guard. You got Rich Bird in at center, and you move Pugh to left guard and have BD out left. That's the starting five and lineup. Should be for the whole season. Let that gel, and that's what it's going to be. And we're going to get, I guarantee we get back in the playoffs. You put BD out at left. You move Pugh in at left guard. Let Schwartz play right guard because that's where he's more comfortable at. And then you put Rich Bird in at center. Those are the best five. That's the way it's supposed to be. And another thing. I want to know, do you think because I kind of think we need another corner, too. Do you think we'll go after Cal Arrington, the Patriots just released? And I believe Reuben Randle will have a better year, being the fact that Odell Beckham Jr. is on the team, and that's his boy. So I believe Odell Beckham is going to bring out the best in Reuben. That's what I believe. What y'all think?
Well, two things. Odell Beckham Jr., by the way, is going to do the ESPN tour tomorrow. So make sure if you are not home to watch it, make sure you DVR it. I'm sure he'll be on like Mike and Mike and then First Take and Numbers Never Lie. And so
right.
That'll be cool. So make sure you DVR ESPN tomorrow. And I certainly hope so, because I'll tell you what, this is something that I've been talking about. And actually, Steve Weatherford, who does a show on ESPN 98.7 here in New York with Dave Rothenberg, I was listening to him the other day when I was driving into the city, and Weatherford was talking about the game against the St. Louis Rams that they had, where the St. Louis Rams really came at Odell Beckham Jr., not only physically, but verbally. and really tried to get into his head. And I've said this before on the show. He made such an impact last year, obviously winning Rookie of the Year. He was the silver lining with this organization and this team last year. I really, truly believe he is a big reason why the Giants have so many primetime games. Teams and defenses are going to game plan for him. Teams and defenses are going to watch that Rams game, and the teams that do play with that type of dirty kind of element to their style of defense, they're going to bring it. And Odell's going to need Reuben Randle to step up. Odell's going to need, hopefully, fingers crossed, I think expecting Victor Cruz to be 100% is asking a lot, but at least an 85-90% Victor Cruz. And so I think Odell's going to need the other guys in this wide receiving core to step up to help him this season. I really do believe
that. And I believe they truly will, because Odell's bring out the best in everybody else. He makes the whole receiving core want to play. They're going to be ready to play every 16 games that we play. I guarantee that, Anita.
I think Odell makes everybody. I think Odell makes the defense want to play harder.
He want to play.
I mean, he's
the type of guy we need on this team.
Yeah.
That's the guy that sparked this team to get back to where we're going this year. I know exactly where we're going. Going to the Super Bowl, because every 4 years we go.
All right, Brian, appreciate the phone call. Thanks
so much. Hold on, one more thing.
Quick,
what did you think about the offensive line that I had said? That's the way that I believe that it should be. And I want to know if we're going to get Kyle Arrington.
Well, Kyle Arrington is now a free agent, as you mentioned. The Patriots let him go. I mean, it's pure speculation. The Giants don't comment on, you know, who they may be looking at and so forth. I think right now the Giants do have a number of internal options that they're looking to develop. Spags spoke about Tremaine McBride two days ago, during his press conference, in which he mentioned that he looks at him as a slot corner, somebody that can contribute. Mike Harris as well. You know, if Prince and DRC are healthy, those are going to be the two outside corners. Could the Giants look at certainly a free agent? It's possible, but I don't think there's anything imminent now that proves that they're going to go after him. And appreciate the phone call, Brent. Thanks so much for chiming in here.
But really quick, this is something that I think I've mentioned with you before, and that is, you know, once training camp happens, you know, there's teams in the NFL that have a lot of depth at the DB position. And so, you know, and if anybody's watched Hard Knocks, you know how difficult it is when you get down to that final cut and you've got position coaches that are standing up in front of, you know, the general manager and the head coaches and making really a statement and a plea to please don't cut this guy. We really need him. He's a great player. He's a great teammate. And unfortunately, out of the other 31 teams, there's going to be a team that's going to cut a DB, specifically a safety, that could be starting on somebody else's roster. And so, you know, I think that that's also a possibility for this Giants organization, this Giants team, that the roster might not be complete in regard to who might be starting Game 4, Game 6 for the Giants, even towards the end of training camp, until those teams make that final cut.
Well, the players that are going to be with the team during training camp, or at least during the period of time right now, are always going to have an edge because they're learning the system. You bring in a veteran late, there's always that adjustment period. They did bring in Israel Adonijé late last year. He didn't make the team, but he did look pretty good in the preseason. So it's very possible that the Giants will bring in an established veteran later on in terms of training camp and so forth. We were also talking about Reuben Randle. Now, keep in mind, Randle had one of his best games in that Rams game as a result of what Odell did. Randle had 6 catches for 132 yards and a touchdown. So he has elevated his game when it's viewed that Beckham draws attention his way. The key for Randle is, will he be able to do this through stretches of 3 or 4 consecutive games? But there have been contests. If you go back to late last season, Beckham's drawing double teams. Beckham is doing his thing, and Randle took advantage. The key for this year is, can you do it for 5, 6, 7 consecutive games?
Also, the caller had mentioned, you know, used the word the Giants going to the playoffs, because they always go to the playoffs every 4 years. And obviously, we all want that to happen. But taking a look in regard to what the Cowboys were able to do and what the Eagles were able to do, more so than what Washington was able to do. I mean, at the end of the day, granted, you know, some question marks in regard to all their off-the-field issues, the Cowboys ended up walking away with 3 potential first-round draft picks heading into the draft, where a lot of those 3 players were expected to land. Of course, they get Greg Hardy, and then you had Jerry Jones, who allegedly was on a Dallas radio station the other day in a roundabout way because he can't literally come out and say, I'm willing to give up a first-round drop pick for Adrian Peterson because then he'd get fined by the NFL. But in a roundabout way, he pretty much said that he would give up a 2016 first-round draft pick for a caliber player like Adrian Peterson. And Dez Bryant came out yesterday and said he'd love to play with Adrian Peterson. So, and I've been saying this since I came back from Arizona. I think at the end of the day, I think Adrian Peterson ends up with the Dallas Cowboys. I truly believe that. That's a big concern for me. If you didn't think that offensive line could get better, guess what? It just did. And you put arguably the league's best running back in that backfield after a year off to get healthy and to come in, and I'm sure he's going to be playing with a chip on his shoulder. That's dangerous to me. So in regard to the NFC East, that would be my biggest concern in regard to the Giants making it to the playoffs, is if Adrian Peterson ends up on the Dallas Cowboys with that offensive line, I've got some concerns there.
Well, this division, as it stands right now, even without Adrian Peterson, I think is extremely challenging. These teams always beat each other up. The Redskins improved. They upped their offensive line through the draft. They also brought in a few defensive players as well. Philadelphia, through free agency in the draft, has tried to solidify its defense, specifically on the back end, which was a major weakness on the team last year. So, to me, if Peterson comes, that's going to be a challenge as it stands. But right now, I can see that this division being very brutal for just about everybody.
What about the Philadelphia Eagles? I mean, report this week, the Tampa Bay Bucks came out and it confirmed that Chip Kelly had called them, was making an offer, wanted to leap up to number one to get Marcus. Obviously, it didn't happen. So now it's Sam Bradford. Your thoughts on Sam Bradford in that offense? I mean, how good do you think that Eagles offense is going to be with Sam Bradford playing in that Chip Kelly system?
Well, if he stays healthy, I think they should be okay. Remember, Pat Shurmur's the offensive coordinator. People tend to overlook that. Pat Shurmur worked with Sam Bradford when they were with St. Louis. So there's an established relationship between the offensive coordinator and the starting quarterback. The problem with Bradford is it's not that he's not a good quarterback. It's that he's been struck by the injury bug.
Three times.
If he can stay healthy, they should be okay. I don't think it's an issue about the system and what's going to be run. It's just a health issue. That's the major question mark with respect to Sam Bradford. And that's also why they have a number of other quarterbacks that they brought in, such as Mark Sanchez and so forth, who at least have some experience in that system. But I'm not so worked up about, you know, what's going to happen with the Eagles system. If I'm the Eagles, I'm just concerned about, can Bradford get through a stretch? Not can he get through 16 games. Can he give you at least 10? Can you get Sam Bradford on the field for 10 games? You get him on the field for 10 games, and that is major progress. If you can't get him on for more than half the season, then obviously that's going to present some major challenges.
I guess where I'm going with this is to say, you know, Chip Kelly's system for a quarterback who is as injury-prone as Sam Bradford, to me, is concerning. Because it's a system that I think kind of leaves the quarterback out there more so than others susceptible to injury. And this is a quarterback who's been injured three times with his knee. So that's where I was going with that.
Well, it remains to be seen whether or not they're going to tweak the system too. I think when we go from one season to another, everybody assumes that things are going to stay as is. And I understand that there weren't any changes from an offensive coordinator standpoint, but changes sometimes come even when the coordinators don't change. And maybe the Eagles are going to try to adopt their system around Sam Bradford. I'll bring it back to the Giants. I thought what Ben McAdoo said was very interesting. He was asked about the evolution of the Giants' offensive system. And he talked about how, you know, it's not a system anymore. It's their offense. And the reporters were pressing him, can you expand on that? And what he explained was, you know, last year we came in, we installed the system. And the goal was we have X amount of plays, and the player's going to have to adapt to the plays. That's the goal. They got to learn the plays. They have to learn the jargon. He says, coming into this season, now I have adopted a new philosophy. It's that I'm looking at the strengths of my players, and I am adapting my system to the strengths of my players.
And I love it. And I love when an offensive coordinator does that. I am because there are two philosophies. There is one philosophy that this is my system, and I'm going to take this player, and I'm going to put him here, and I'm going to take this player and put him here, and I'm going to take this player where, you know, then there's the other philosophy, and what you're talking about, what you're alluding to, that you're saying Ben McAdoo wants to do this season, and that is, all right, Odell Beckham Jr. runs this route, and this route in the pattern tree better than he runs this route. He plays better on this side than he does this side. So I'm going to put Odell, you know, so you construct your offense more so based on the strengths of the players that are within it, as opposed to plugging in players into your offense and hoping that they're successful and that they're going to pull it off for you. And so I love that mentality more so than anything else.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. This is Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. She's Anita Marks. I'm Lance Meadow. So glad you could spend part of your day with us. Carl is in North Carolina. Carl, what's happening? Carl, if you could lower your internet, your computer, that would be great. You're on the air. Carl, are you there? Carl, going once?
Yeah,
Carl,
I'm here.
All right, Carl, what do you got for us?
I'm here.
Okay, Carl, if you could lower your internet, your computer, then we would be able to hear you and not hear our voices. Even though we're in love with our own voices, we're not that crazy about it. Okay? So we're going to try it again. Carl, are you there? Carl, you can put him on hold, Greg, and we'll try to get to somebody else, because clearly sometimes going through the basics is very challenging and difficult. Let's hope Vic in Florida cooperates today. Vic, what's happening?
Good afternoon there, Anita and Lance.
Good afternoon to you.
I have to agree with Anita on her statement about DeMontre Moore. I think if he doesn't have a breakthrough year this year, I don't think he's going to be around too long. And as far as the receiver, I forgot his name now. Reuben Randall had the last part of the season, the last five or six games, I think he had a brilliant season. And I think it's going to continue, and he's going to be okay. Now, the other thing I wanted to say, I was totally impressed from the little bit that I seen of in the minicamp for the rookies with Matt Lacoste, the tight end. I wish he can make the team and we'll have a great tight end as far as blocking and as far as catching is concerned. Now, the other thing I wanted to ask, when is the OTA start for the vets?
They're going to have one in late May, and then they'll have others in June.
Lee May. Okay,
yeah.
Thank you. That's really what I wanted to know. I thank you for your show. Thank you for taking my call. And you guys are doing a great job. Have a great afternoon, and we'll chat with you again later.
All right,
bye-bye.
You got it. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in.
I love
in.
That. I'm sorry. You were going to say something?
I was just going to mention something about Matt Lacoste, the tight end.
Please do, because I'm really excited. I heard great things about him in this minicamp.
He was the tight end out of Illinois who they did sign. He was one of the six players that they signed even before minicamp started. He did speak to the media, and they were asking him about, you know, where did they put you on the field at Illinois? And he said, they pretty much put me everywhere. They asked me to
even
be...
Even threw the ball sometimes.
Well, that may have been a possibility of practice, but he did show that he had some versatility. They used him as a fullback. They used him in the slot. He blocked. He was the tight end that ran routes. He did say that if he was to self-evaluate himself as a tight end, a vertical threat, that's his biggest asset.
Exactly.
At least that he looks at himself. And he said that during junior year, he was mostly used as a receiver. Senior year, when the established senior graduated, who was used as the blocker the previous year, they brought him back to the line and they said, hey, you got to help out the offensive line. So there is some versatility, there's some balance in his game, but he does view himself as a key vertical threat.
Yeah, and that's exciting stuff, especially when you look at this wide receiving core. And again, you know, we're all hoping, fingers crossed, that Victor Cruz comes back and is 100%. We just don't know. And not a knock on the tight ends that are already on the squad. But we saw, you know, Larry Donnell, the first four games came out, was great, kind of disappeared in the middle of the season. And then, you know, a few weeks, 1 week here, he had a good game. And then another 2 weeks, he kind of just, there was no consistency in regard to the tight ends contributing to the passing game. Very excited to see what this young man can do and bring that element to the passing game.
Well, you were talking about show me players. If we're to look at the tight ends specifically, you have Larry Donnell, you have Daniel Fells, and you have Adrian Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
Fells and Donnell clearly were a little bit more consistent than what Robinson brought to the table, and Robinson has been battling injuries. Now you bring in Matt Lacoste. What you're doing is you're now putting pressure on the guy that's third on the depth chart, if the depth chart stays as is heading into the season. And that's not a bad thing, Anita, because
no, competition is a great thing.
Exactly. So I think that by them signing an undrafted player and saying to the whole tight end group, as you were touching on, hey, we have room for improvement in that group as a whole, even though Larry Donnell certainly shined and provided a whole new dimension to this offense. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Let's head back to the lines. We'll get to your tweets in a little bit. I know a lot of people chiming in as well. John is in Minnesota. John, welcome to the program.
Hi, yes, Plant, Giants fan, first-time caller. I have a few points. I really like the wide receiver, Jeremy Davis. I don't necessarily like him as a wide receiver. I was thinking of him more as a hybrid tight end. What do you think about that?
You're talking about the tight end they just brought in? Did
no,
I hear you
correctly? The wide receiver.
No, no.
The wide receiver.
You're talking about Jeremy Davis you're talking about.
I'm thinking star gunner. I'm thinking like special teams, star gunner, making a name for himself, stud. That's what I'm thinking.
I would agree. I think they're viewing him as mainly a special teams player, and he'll be on the back end of the depth chart at wide receiver. But if you look at all of the other players that they have in camp already at wide receiver, John, I think it's going to be very difficult for him to, you know, create a niche role for himself, even maybe when they go three or four wide. So I think his main contributions will probably come on special teams as a rookie.
And really quick, just to interject here, don't go anywhere. You know, last year I felt like every day I hosted Big Blue Kickoff Live, we were getting callers call in about Corey Washington. And we saw him have a really great preseason, but unfortunately did not see him really contribute much during the regular season. And that very well could have been because he really didn't get an opportunity to come on the field and make plays. But nonetheless, based on what they've done here with this wide receiving core, you want to talk about competition. You know, there's going to be some competition here, and there's going to be some competition for Corey Washington. As exciting and as explosive he was this past preseason, I'm excited to see what he's going to bring to the equation this year with the additions of the wide receiving corps and the competition that will be much greater this season than last. I want to see Corey Washington deliver and respond and hopefully see him on the playing field in the regular season.
I was thinking more about, the tight end position and having him add 20 pounds and being a dynamic hybrid type of tight end. You know, I see, the West Coast offense has how effective it could be with the that hybrid type end. You know, I see that Jeremy Davis has, you know, some ability at blocking. He'll never be an overpowering blocker, but, you know, I was thinking that, you know, I don't see anybody on our roster that has that hybrid potential, I guess. And I was kind of looking at Jeremy Davis in that kind of sense.
I'm looking at really quick. I'm just for the folks out there that are listening. Right now, he's 6'3", 216. A 6'3", obviously, but would need to put some pounds on in regard if you wanted to use him as a tight end. Especially be able to block a lot of those defensive ends that he'd be going up against. Again, I look at him, tell me if you think I'm wrong, but I look at him like a star gunner on special teams.
Yeah, and that's, I think, one of the roles that they envision utilizing him at. To get back to your point, John, in terms of tight ends, you know, if you look at Larry Donnell and you look at Matt Lacoste, who they brought in as an undrafted free agent, I think that they meet that hybrid type of a role that you're talking about, where you're talking about a player that you can ask to block. They don't always need to be a blocker, but also could provide a vertical threat. So therefore, I don't know necessarily if Jeremy Davis is going to bring anything different to the table that perhaps you don't already have in the forms of your tight ends.
Okay. And two quick points before I get off. I think that the two safeties that we drafted are very – are Spagnuolo type guys. They're very smart. They're kind of that need that Spagnuolo has those guys that could be very versatile and smart in the backfield. I was wondering if you could comment on that. And I think that DeMontre Moore, I heard you talk about him earlier. I think he's going to take off this year in the sense that, He'll be in that defensive end rotation. He'll be asked to be more aggressive, which is, you know, Demontre Moore is always pretty aggressive when he's out there. He kind of reminds me of OC in that sense. And if you could comment on that, I'll hang up and listen.
All right, John, appreciate the phone call. Your first point about the safeties being a great fit for Spags' system, I mentioned off the top of the show, Landon Collins there, impressed with what he was already able to show in rookie minicamp. Forget the X's and O's, just that leadership, those smarts to be able to direct traffic and assume a role where players respect you. Now, it's very rare for a rookie to come in and have to play a position of leadership, and guys who are established veterans who have 5 or 6 years in the league are all of a sudden going to say, sure, we're going to listen to the rookie. You know, you point us where to go and we're going to bow down. I mean, that's unique for him to already show an inkling to be able to do that. And granted, he's only working with rookies right now, so you can only read so much into that. I still think that's impressive.
But look around this DB core. You know, with Stevie Brown gone and he's with the Texans and Entrell Roll gone, now he's with the Chicago Bears. Prince of Mokomura is fantastic, but is he a vocal leader? He leads by his play on the field. He's not very a vocal leader. And the same with DRC.
Not a vocal guy.
Not a vocal guy. There is an opportunity here for Landon Collins to walk into this DB core and become the leader. If Antrell Roll was here, don't think it could happen. Antrell Roll was not only the leader of the DB core, but the leader of the defense, let alone the leader of the team as a whole. He's gone. If Stevie Brown was here again, Stevie Brown, kind of not so much either. This is a great opportunity for Landon Collins. You want to talk about a vocal leader, step into the role as a rookie and take charge of that core? Yes, I can absolutely see it happening. Absolutely. Because it's missing right now. It's missing. So it will be really intriguing to see what happens when the veterans come in and he steps in. And also, look, he played for Nick Saban and the Alabama Crimson Tide. You know, if ever there is a team in college football that you have a player that can transcend and just take that step and have it be an easy step, not that anything's easy, but when it comes to making the transition from college to the NFL, but easier than most, it's coming from Nick Saban's system. So it's just it's kind of like, I guess the stars have aligned properly for Landon Collins to really step in and not only really have an opportunity here with Spags defense, but become a leader on this defense.
And with respect to Demontre Moore about being more aggressive and, you know, being more consistent, that's obviously what the Giants are looking for. I remember talking about Demontre Moore last year, and he'll be the first one to say this when he spoke to reporters. You know, he needs to show the coaching staff that he can be an every down defensive lineman. That's what they're looking for. He's got a knack to get to the quarterback. He's got a knack to be disruptive on special teams. That's been well documented. The key is to stop the run so that they don't have to pull him out, perhaps, on a play where the opposition is running the I formation and they need Demontre Moore to embed himself into the trenches. So that, to me, is the next step in his progression. If he does that, then the sky is the roof for his development. Let's head back to the phone lines. Obviously, we want to fit in a few more before we wrap things up. Mel is in New Jersey. Mel, what's happening?
Oh, what's up, guys?
How we doing, Mel?
That's Mo, by the way.
What do you got?
So I want to talk a little bit about Landon Collins. Really shocked that he fell that low to the second round. I think that Giants fans should really be really ecstatic because, I mean, we know he maybe can't do so well as he's not very fluid, so maybe he can't cover spot corners. And we know he can't play center field by himself. But everything else coming out of college, I think, is really, like, at the elite level as far as defending the run, being the quarterback of the defense, covering tight ends. I think it's a real steal where the Giants got him at the second round. I think they should – I mean, there is a lot of excitement, but I'm personally really salivating at the mouth to the point when they get pads on. They can really see what he can do with pads on.
Well, and that's what even the coaching staff mentioned. Steve Spagnuolo, when he spoke to the media, he said, guys, I could give you my feelings on these players and so forth, but I got to wait and see till the pads come on. It's really premature. And, you know, that gets back to my point about the offensive line, too. You know, I'm not saying that Ereck Flowers shouldn't be the starter day one. I'm saying that it's impractical to make those type of bold statements from the team standpoint right now when, like you just alluded to, and I thought you brought up a good point, the players haven't even put the pads on yet. So why are you jumping the gun, setting your depth chart, and giving the opposition an opportunity to get ahead and study on your alignment? It makes no sense. I mean, that to me is what you need to take into consideration. From a strategic standpoint, there is no benefit to making announcements this early in the game. Continue.
Yeah, I agree with your point. I have one more question I want to ask you guys, and hopefully Paul and John, whenever they get back on, can answer it too. And Anita kind of alluded to it earlier, but I want to know what your guys like X-factor players are on offense and defense, like excluding the best players, so not Eli and not JPP, kind of like the one player on offense and defense you think really needs to step up to take each respective offense, defense, to the next level. For me, really quickly, personally, I would also pick Reuben Randall because I think Odell's going to see a lot of double coverage and they're going to put a lot of attention to him. So we'll see if, Reuben can kind of sustain for a whole season, kind of being a number one wideout in a way. And on defense, personally, I'm going to go a little bit outside the box, but I'm going to go with JT Thompson, only because I think it's been a while since – and I like Devon Kennard a lot too. But with JT Thompson, so hopefully we have, a very athletic linebacker with some speed that can really, play against the run really well. Of course, last season, there were too many times the running backs got past the linebackers and kind of chasing downfield. So hopefully JT can fill that role. So I just want to hear your guys' thoughts on that. Thanks again.
Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much.
I've already said Demontre Moore and Reuben Randall, but if I had to pick a number two on the offense, I'm excited to see what Andre Williams is going to do this year. You get Rashad Jennings, and he said he's fine. He's healthy. He feels 100%. He's coming in. Shane Vereen, some people feel the best free agent pickup. I am in agreement with that, but I think that you can kind of make an argument for JT Thomas. I do believe JT Thomas will be a starting linebacker in this core, and I think JT Thomas is going to have a really phenomenal year this year with the Giants. I'm excited for this young man. If you go back and you look at what he was able to do in Jacksonville, and I've had some time that I've been able to speak to him and spend some time with him, he's really excited for this opportunity. He's really excited to be here. He's really excited about this defense. So I'm with you with JT Thomas. I'm expecting big things from him this year. But on the offensive side of the ball, Andre Williams just wants to be such a great football player. And you bring in Shane Vereen, you got Rashad Jennings. They're a great core. They get along. The three of them are really, really tight already. But I want to see what Andre Williams, his vision. In talking to Paul DeTino last year and asking Paul, what are you seeing from him? What's going on? What's wrong? What could he improve on? Paul would always say his vision. He needs better vision. Maybe this is the year he went out. He had the LASIK surgery to the eyes. Maybe this is the year that we see Andre Williams come in his second year and really compete for some touches. So I'm excited for that as well. I mean, listen, if you're a Giants fan, you've got to be really happy with the free agents that have come in. You've got to be absolutely thrilled with the way that the draft kind of panned out. And fingers crossed everybody stays healthy. You got to be excited about this 2015 season.
To answer the caller's question, I would throw out on offense, I'm going to go offensive line. And I'm going to say that everything feeds off of the offensive line, especially the running game in particular, as you just touched on. I look at Jeff Schwartz, because Jeff Schwartz was brought in last season. He barely played. So, he's a guy that could step in and make an immediate impact because he's an established veteran, depending on where they put him on the line. That, to me, is a crucial part of the offense this season, since the offensive line sets the tone for what you're going to do in the passing game and the running game. On defense, JT Thomas is one of the guys that I was going towards. Now, since he was already taken, I'm going to head in a different direction, and I'm going to go with another new member of the team. I'm going to go with Landon Collins. The safety position right now is in need of a playmaker, is in need of a voice, and it's an integral part of the back end of the defense. Landon Collins has an opportunity, as we've emphasized throughout the course of this program, to step in day one, not just be a starter, but be an impactful player. He could do so much heavy lifting back there, so I'm going to go with Landon Collins on defense.
Interesting.
Let's head back to the phone lines as we get closer to wrapping up the program. AJ is in South Carolina. AJ, what's happening?
Good afternoon. I got a question about Bobby Hart. Do you think he can play either a guard or a position?
You're asking if Bobby Hart could play a guard position. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Well, to answer your question, AJ, and appreciate the phone call, he can play guard. During the course of college, he was lined up at both tackle and guard. And let me bring out his numbers here. I have them charted. This is what Bobby Hart did during the course of his collegiate career. 2014, He started all 14 games at right tackle. 2013, he started all 14 games at right tackle. 2012, he appeared in 8 games as a backup guard, and he was also a member of the field goal kicking team. And then 2011, as a freshman, he appeared in 11 games. He started the final 9 at left tackle. So he's been at left tackle, he's been at right tackle, and he's also seen some time at guard. When he spoke with reporters, he mentioned that as he made the transition to the NFL, he was envisioning himself as a guard. So the writing has always been on the wall that when Bobby Hart was moving to the NFL, he wasn't concerned about whether he would fit in as a right tackle or left tackle. It would be guard. So they do envision him as a guard. And even when they spoke after the draft, whether it be Tom Coughlin and Jerry Reese, that is where they have him penciled in as providing depth and competing at that position. So he is very much a fit for the guard position. Let's head back to the phone lines, and we greet Shakes in Maryland. Shakes, what's happening?
What's going on, Lance? And how you doing, Anita?
I'm great.
Doing well, Shakes. What's happening with you?
Hey, Anita, can I be real with you real quick?
Please.
Okay.
Would expect right, nothing
now, remember
less.
Remember when I first called? And I was, like, such a huge fan because I watched you here in Baltimore on TV or whatever. I don't know if you remember that call.
I do.
But, okay, so you do. All right. And then, like, sometime last year, you kind of lost me with the things you were saying. I don't remember exactly what you were saying, but it was, like, some things I was like, what is she talking about? But.
Well, you have to give me examples so I can explain what I was talking about.
I can't really give you an example. It was just some things last year. I was just like, wow, what is she talking about? But, nevertheless, since, like, last few shows I haven't heard you, you've been on point, and especially on today's show, you have been hitting everything. So I just wanted to just commend you on how you've been doing lately.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I'm still curious where I lost you last season, but thank you.
I don't know. Maybe I have to go back to the archives, and later on we'll bring it up.
Yeah, please do. I'm curious, but thank you for the compliment for today. I appreciate it.
No doubt. I like what you said about the flowers because Lance is making me mad over this.
I don't understand how I'm making you mad, but I'm listening.
At 9, hold on, Lance, hold on. When you take somebody at 9, he better be a starter.
But, Shakes, when did I say that he wasn't going to be a starter, though? When did I say he wasn't going to be a starter?
Like, oh, look, we got to wait. But let's just say, general consensus, if he's took it at 9, he better be a starter. If he's not a starter, then you shouldn't have took him at 9.
Shakes, let me ask you a question. This was thrown out on Twitter, so I also need to give a number of Giants fans some credit. Did Eli Manning start day one?
No.
Okay. What pick was Eli Manning?
What?
I'm just throwing it out to further the conversation, Shakes, because you just told
it's
me if you're
though,
a top 10
it's
pick.
It's a difference in
but,
a quarterback.
Whoa, oh, now we're making exceptions, though, here.
No, it is a difference.
But,
you know it's a difference.
But I'm just saying, you're drawing out exceptions.
I won't say that, but I will say this, Lance, and that is today's college college players and the schemes and the systems that they're playing in today are so much further advanced than when Eli was playing football that there are a larger number of players that can make that leap and make that transition their first years. It's just, I think the college game has transcended. I think it's grown. I think it's developed. I think the coaches of the top programs that the players are coming out of are implementing NFL-style offenses, NFL-style defenses, where the transition is a lot easier than when Eli played. Just my take. And I've been sitting here. I mean, Lance and I discussed this before the show started. Lance isn't saying that Flowers isn't going to start. What Lance is saying is that it's okay that the organization hasn't come out and said Flowers is going to be the starting right tackle for the Giants in 2015. That's what Lance is saying. Lance is like, it's okay that the organization hasn't done that yet. And I understand that and I respect that. I just feel like I'm expecting it. And I think Lance is as well.
Okay, please don't cut me off. I still got a few more points there, and I'm going to let y'all go. The Cruz injury kind of worries me. You know, because when you say, well, even if he comes back 85, 90%, and I was saying the same thing. And I'm like, but more than I think about it, like, I don't want Cruz to come back unless he's 100% healthy. Just 100% healthy. Well, and I think that even if you are 100% healthy with that type of injury, it's still a mind thing as well. So maybe he should be a pup-less candidate.
Well, a few things here. Number one, again, and I've said this before, you know, that there's really not a really big track record of wide receivers in the NFL that have returned from a patella tendon tear. A ton of ACL, meniscus tears, PCLs. Yeah, we've seen those. This is a very unique injury that Victor Cruz has suffered. And so all eyes, really, believe it or not, I think across the board, across the league, especially in the medical field, are really going to wait and see how Victor Cruz recovers from this. Because this doesn't happen. This is not an injury that happens often to wide receivers. So that's first and foremost. But I'll say this. I've had 3 ACL reconstruction. When you talk to players in and around the NFL that have had ACL reconstruction, they might start the season a year off of the surgery at 85%, but they'll tell you they're not 100% for 2 years. What your body has to go through in regard to really coming back and being 100%, you need 2 years. So, you know, will Victor Cruz start off on the PUP? Maybe. So the Giants get him in game 7. I don't think that's such a bad thing. Hopefully, fingers crossed that he'll start game 1. We'll see what happens. But I think all eyes, beyond just Giants fans, beyond just the Giants organization, I think all people are going to take note in regard to how Victor Cruz recovers from this, because it's just not a common injury that you see happen.
Okay, last few points. Y'all real high on JT Thomas, and I'm wondering why. I'm not trying to knock him down and say he won't be anything or he won't provide anything for us. But my thing is, it took him 3 years to crack the starting lineup on the Jacksonville Jaguars, and it was by injury that he cracked the starting lineup.
Yeah, because there was a lot of talent on that line, on that linebacking.
Yeah.
But also there was a lot of talent on that linebacking core.
Talent.
Yeah. So I just
can you list the talent real quick?
No,
I don't know no talent at linebacker over there.
I don't have their depth chart in front of me.
Well,
but
he replaced Paul Posluszny, Shakes. That's how he got into the starting lineup. Posluszny went down, who's the veteran.
But I don't know
Bills
who are the other
Jaguars
linebackers. Off the top of my head, I don't know who all the other starting linebackers were for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
I can bring up the depth chart last
but this is my take in regard to JT Thomas coming in here, having an opportunity to compete for the starting job. You know, I like what Devon. I think my take is I believe it's going to be Devon Kennard, John Beeson, and JT Thomas as starting linebackers, and then you fill in the other guys that are here. I this is my 7th year covering the Giants. I'm more excited about this linebacking core than I have in previous years. I think this very well could be one of the best, most athletic, most competitive linebacking cores the Giants have seen in 6 to 7 years. I really, truly believe that.
I'm still worried about this linebacker core. So the fact that you said that, I so hope you're right.
I hope I'm right, too.
My last point, and I'm getting off. I'm sorry to hold y'all up. But y'all was talking about the running backs. Watch out for my man Hakeem Hunt, man. Speed kills. That's all I'm going to say. Speed kills. Thank y'all for taking my call.
All right, Jake.
You got it.
Good hearing from you. Hakeem Hunt, one of the players that was signed as an undrafted free agent. I'm going back to my scouting report from the Jaguars game last year where I broke down their depth chart to see who was at linebacker at that time. You had Geno Hayes was playing one of the outside linebacker spots. Telvin Smith was in the other outside linebacker spot. And then JT Thomas, who was with his fourth season in the NFL, second with the Jaguars. He took over as a starter for Paul Posluszny in week 4 after Posluszny suffered the season-ending injury. It was a pectoral muscle.
What? Didn't he have a really big game against the Giants?
He did. He had a huge game.
Right.
On special teams, on defense. Yes, if I'm correct, I think Thomas returned the fumble for a touchdown.
He picked it up.
Yeah, he picked it up in the end zone. That's what it was. So he did. That's actually one of the games that jumped out to them when they were scouting him as a free agent. He forced the fumble too? Okay, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but he did have an impactful game in terms of that. We thank Greg.
I mean, please disagree with me if you think I'm wrong. Are you excited about this linebacking core?
I like JT Thomas, if we're at least to focus on him first, Anita, and to basically get to the point that Shakes was making. It's not so much what he can do as a linebacker. It's also what he can do for the team on special teams.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tom Quinn spoke to the media, and what Tom Quinn was emphasizing, you know, they needed to bring in versatile playmakers. It wasn't just changing the scheme, changing the returner, changing the gunner. Also, the guys that run down in the middle of the field to make tackles. JT Thomas has experience in that department. Dwayne Harris has experience in that department, as does, let's not forget, Jonathan Casillas. So the two linebackers that they brought in are not just players that are going to be complements at the linebacker position on defense, but they're also potentially game changers on special teams. That's why I think those signings are valuable.
Right.
The unit as a whole at linebacker, Devon Kennard, and Spags didn't talk about Devon Kennard at all. I'm surprised nobody asked the question. This, to me, is going to be his toy. That's going to be Spags' toy. He's going to put him probably everywhere. He is probably locking himself in the room late at night, Spags, and he's saying to himself, boy, what can I do with Devon Kennard? That is what I'm excited about, to see where he lines him up. So that has me intrigued. John Beeson, he stays healthy. That obviously can solidify a lot from leadership and playmaking ability. And then with respect to the other spot, you know, JT Thomas is an option. I would not cross Jameel McClain off the list. Remember, McClain's got experience working with Spags at Baltimore. And sometimes that established relationship puts faith in a coordinator to put a player in a specific spot. So don't cross him out. JT Thomas, I think, has intrigue, but I would not eliminate McClain
from
the equation.
I'm not, but I don't think John Beeson's at this stage in his game. I don't think he can play, obviously, every down. I'm seeing McClain and Beeson as a rotating Mike, and I'm seeing JT Thomas and Devon Kennard as weak and strong.
And I could see that very much playing out.
Yeah.
I think in a perfect ideal world, they're hoping that Beeson does stay healthy. But given his track record, you do need to protect for the worst case scenarios. In the event that you do that, then that's how the McClains and the JT Thomases, I think, assume much bigger roles than perhaps have been penciled in right now.
Right.
And that's a fair synopsis. I just want to jump to a few tweets before we wrap up the program real quickly, because I know a lot of people are weighing in who didn't have an opportunity to pick up the phones, and they are certainly related to what we had been throwing out. So let's try to throw out some tweets here on a variety of different topics. And people asking a question, I know, on the tight end position as well with respect to Matt Lacoste. I don't have the tweet in front of me, but somebody asked, can Matt Lacoste beat out Adrian Robinson when it comes down to narrowing the 53-man roster?
Why not?
I would agree.
Why not? I mean, you know, I feel for the past few years, we've kind of been waiting for Adrian Robinson.
Peterson on your mind for
earlier. I do. Yeah. Adrian Robinson to kind of break free, turn that corner, as I like to say, and it hasn't happened. I like competition. Competition typically at times brings out the best in athletes. So, and I think that very well could happen. So, yeah, absolutely.
Let's take a look at a few more tweets here on a variety of topics that people were weighing in terms of the depth chart, in terms of positional battles, as I scroll through here. This was an interesting comment. King_CB at Mr_CBreezy. Davis, referring to Jeremy Davis, the UConn wide receiver, reminds me of Anquan Boldin, because of his size and game speed, good hands, he moves the chains and gets open.
Yeah, possession receiver.
And that was one of the things that the Giants talked about after they drafted him. However, at UConn, he was used as a vertical threat, if you go back and you look at some of the highlights. But in terms of his transition to the NFL, the Anquan Boldin role, I wouldn't go so far to say he's the next coming of Anquan Boldin, but the role and his physique, I think that is a fair comparison.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Let's take a look at some of these other tweets here. Big Dash 07088 at ColeWiss88. He's already lining up the depth chart in terms of how the defense should look. He has JPP, Hankins, Ellis, and Ayers as his defensive line, which is the way that I envision it personally heading in. Linebacker, we were just talking about, he has Kennard, Beeson, and Thomas. So he's exactly how you laid it out. In the backfield, he's got Prince and DRC as the outside corners. Mm-hmm. He has Landon Collins and Matt Burhe as the starting safeties. Big Dash, I'd agree with you. I think that right now, as it stands, barring injuries, I would agree that there's a good chance that that's how the defense looks.
And so just to end on this, which I think is really going to be exciting, because we're talking about OTAs, the first OTAs where the veterans and the rookies get together is towards the end of this month. And then, of course, before we know it, training camp's going to be here. And just sitting here talking about all these positions, there's going to be some battles. And that's what's so fun about training camp. And that's what makes preseason so fun, especially when you get into, you know, that fourth game. Guys that are just trying to make the roster, And obviously there's going to be a battle at the safety position. Obviously there's going to be a battle in regard to the linebacking position. Obviously there's going to be a battle in regard to the defensive line position, the wide receiver position, the tight end position. So, I mean, it's just, I think it's just going to make this offseason and this preseason a lot of fun.
You have some depth now that the draft is over. Undrafted free agents have been brought in at a variety of different positions. It's not just one particular spot. So certainly a lot to look forward to as they move towards OTAs and training camp. The battle to solidify spots in the depth chart will continue. Appreciate all the phone calls, all the tweets. Big Blue Kickoff live with you each and every weekday here at Noon Eastern.
I'm back with Paul Dottino tomorrow.
And then I am back with John on Thursday.
Perfect.
So there you go. You got the layout of the land, the schedule for the next few days. Appreciate everybody for listening. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. We'll speak to you tomorrow here on Giants.com.